There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
It's the Ringer's Philly Special, presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hungry dogs run fast.
It's truly a Philly thing here.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly Special. Sheil Kapadi here. Got positive feedback on last week's Sunday night pod and thought, why not try it again? So here we go. Here's the format. By the way, I'm a little bit of a high after that Sixers game. That was a thrilling Sixers win Sunday night. We're going to get to them eventually. But listen, we are 18 days away from the NFL draft. I've said it before. I know where my bread is buttered with this podcast. And so I'm going to lead with the Eagles here. Then we'll get to that Sixers game, incredible game, and then finish up with some Phillies thoughts. Okay, let's start with the Eagles. Here's where I wanted to start, with the question of how they would be best served to use their first-round pick at number 22, and specifically whether it would make sense to go with an offensive tackle only prospect. So this is kind of a follow-up on last week's show. EJ Smith of the Inquirer joined me. We went over all of the offensive line prospects, talked about, hey, who could be a good fit, who's not a good fit. But I got some follow-up questions from you guys, the audience, saying, all right, yeah, you went over all the prospects, but are we sure we want the Eagles to take an offensive tackle in the first round of the NFL draft? So it comes down to this. We can all agree that if they can find someone who can play right guard right away and then slide over to right tackle when Lane Johnson retires and they feel like this person can play at a high level at both those spots, that is absolutely a reasonable use of resources. But the question is, what if the guy can't play guard? Because two of the guys EJ and I mentioned that we thought, you know what, these guys feel like players, prospects that Jeff Stoutland, that Howie Roseman are really going to like. One of them was Georgia's Amarius Mims. The second one was Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton. Those two dudes are 6'8". They are tackle prospects, okay? Unless I'm missing something, you can send it to me if I missed it. I don't think anyone's talking about either of those two guys as coming in, playing at guard, and then moving over to tackle. So again, does it make sense to draft a player in the first round at number 22, maybe a little higher, maybe a little bit lower if you trade one way or the other, who is only an offensive tackle prospect? So here's what I'm going to do. I want to make the case for and against doing that. And then I want to tell you what I think and what I think the Eagles think. Okay, so let's start there. The case for it is this. You're locked in with Jordan Mailata at left tackle. He got the extension last week. When those numbers come out, I'll go over, you know, what I made of that extension. But listen, the guy is a very good player. He's young, great culture guy, embodies everything that you want from a franchise left tackle. So no issue with that. You hope he's your left tackle for years to come. But the other side, Lane Johnson is entering his age 34 season, okay? If you look at the last 5 years, here are the tackles in the entire NFL who have started at least 10 games at age 34 or older. Andrew Whitworth, Duane Brown, Donald Penn, Trent Williams, Jason Peters. That's the whole list. Five players age 34 or older in the last five seasons have started 10 games or more in a single season. What's the point here? The point is that Lane Johnson is in uncommon territory. He's been a great player. I think he has a great Hall of Fame case. He has missed 16 games in the past four seasons. And generally speaking, the older you get, the more vulnerable you're going to be to getting injured. So right now with this Eagles team, you do not have any offensive tackle depth, okay? Your backup tackles are Fred Johnson and LaRaven Clark. There is no Halapulavati Vaitai on your roster. There is not even a Jack Driscoll. There is not even an Andre Dillard on the roster where you say, you know what, if one of these offensive tackles goes down, it's all good. You got someone you can plug in there, whether it's for four games, eight games, 16 games, whatever. You feel good about it. No, you don't have that right now on the roster. And so can you really afford to let one offensive line injury ruin your entire season? Because I can tell you the Eagles feel like in seasons past, 2020 specifically, that was a big, big factor when they look at their seasons that have been ruined or that have been disappointing. A lot of times they look at it and said, well, we didn't have enough offensive line depth. The offensive line underperformed. We didn't do everything we could to kind of get insurance at those spots. And that's why our seasons fell apart. So can you afford to do that this season? If you draft a tackle that you feel good about, he fills an important depth role immediately. Now, depth role is key there. He's not going to be on the field unless someone gets injured. But man, it would sure feel good that if Lane Johnson goes down, if Jordan Mailata goes down, you have a guy that Jeff Stoutland likes that can kind of grow into that role as the season goes on if he has to play and provide you competent offensive tackle play with some upside. I mean, sometimes guys go in there and they're a revelation and you say, wow, this guy is even better than you thought right away, and you figure it out. And then obviously you would want that player to eventually take over for Lane Johnson. So that's the case for going it. I mean, that's the big case. It's that if the best player available at 22 or around there is an offensive tackle and you like the guy, go ahead and take him. Don't mess around. Don't force need. You're still filling a valuable spot on your 53-man roster, even if that person might not see the field right away. All right, now the case against it. Case against it is you're in a Super Bowl window right here, okay? If you draft a tackle, you are taking a player whose only path to playing time is an injury to Lane Johnson or Jordan Mailata. He can't play other positions. He's not going to beat those two guys out. So if they don't get injured, he's essentially taking a redshirt year. By the way, I mean, he might be taking more than one redshirt year. He might not have a path to playing time for 2 to 3 years. Lane Johnson is signed through 2026. I think he said last June that he wanted to play a couple more years beyond 2023. The truth is, you never know how long a guy is going to want to play for when he gets to this age. Jason Kelce took it year by year after the Super Bowl season. He decided, I want to come back for one more year. After last season, he said, you know what? I'm finished. I'm going to go ahead and retire. So much will depend on how Lane Johnson's body feels. He's talked a lot about mental health, how he feels with his mental health. At that point, does he want to continue playing? Is it the best for kind of his quality of life? What he wants out of life at this stage? How much fun he's having? How good the team is? What his plans are for life after football? There are so many factors that go into these things. They're very, very difficult decisions. If I had to handicap it right now, I mean, I would just go off of what Lane Johnson said. Again, he could change his mind at any point, but if you go off what he has said, and probably that's the best thing we can go off of right now, I would say it's more likely than not that he tries to play at least two more years. So if that's your mindset as an organization, and listen, maybe the Eagles have different information. Maybe they've had conversations with Lane Johnson more recently and don't think that's going to be the case. But if that's the information we have publicly, that, you know, Lane Johnson has generally been a very honest guy in speaking publicly and speaking to the media. So if that's the information we have, given the other holes on the roster, does it really make sense to draft someone who has no path to playing time, barring an injury, for potentially 2 years? And it's, again, I have to stress this, it's when you're trying to win a Super Bowl. If you are in a different stage of your roster construction, of a rebuild, of whatever right now, then it might be a different story. It might be an easier decision. But you are trying to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years, and first round picks are very valuable resources to have, where if you hit, man, you can get a blue chip player at a certain position who you don't have right now, who you might have in September, October of this upcoming season that can really, really help you. Are you willing to potentially give that away for a guy who's going to be sitting on the bench barring an injury? All right. So those are the two sides. I'll be honest. I tend to be on the side of it being a less than ideal use of resources. If you're a longtime listener, you heard me talk about this back during the Dallas Goedert draft in 2018. But my thing is, you know, I know when you have a good roster, it's going to be harder for rookies to play than if you have a bad roster. But think of some of the other positions, you know, they have here. Like, even at wide receiver, you would say, hey, they're in great shape with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Having said that, if you get to 22 and the best available player is a wide receiver, the guy at least has a chance to play like 1,000 snaps as a rookie if he's a good player. That's what Olamide Zaccheaus, Quez Watkins, Julio Jones, those guys combined for 1,000 snaps last year. So it's not like it would be someone who would just be on the bench. Now, I'm sure we will in the weeks ahead get into a longer conversation about whether wide receiver would even be a good use of resources in the first round, in the second round, whatever. But as I'm telling you, the player would at least be on the field right away. And if one of those two guys were to go down, he would become an integral player. Edge rusher. You could talk yourself into the idea that this rookie could battle for playing time right away with Nolan Smith, with Brandon Graham, maybe even with Josh Sweat. And if it's someone you really like, this could be Josh Sweat's replacement in 2025. I mean, there's a reasonable case to be made there. I didn't even mention Bryce Huff. Take some snaps away from Bryce Huff, where, yes, he's making that leap to full-time player, but at the same time, you're able to rotate a little bit more. So there, you could make that case at edge rusher. Defensive tackle. Maybe you hedge your bet on Jordan Davis. You say, yeah, we were hoping for one thing, but we're not going to be blind to what we've seen on the field through the first two seasons. And have there been some flashes? Yes. Does he look like a good run defender? Sure. But you need interior pass rush. You lost Fletcher Cox. So a defensive tackle could potentially come in right away and help you maybe on third down, pass rushing situations, give you depth. Again, even if he's not a starter, that player is going to contribute right away. He's not just going to be on the bench. And then you have your need positions. I mean, corner, linebacker, we all know. I mean, if they were to draft someone in the first round at either of those positions, they're starting right away and they're playing 100% of the snaps. There's no doubt. If they're not, it's a complete disaster of a pick. Even safety, you could make the case for. You got Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, you got Reed Blankenship, you got Sidney Brown, but if you were to take a guy in the first round, at the very least, you would say, all right, Vic Fangio, come up with some, you know, you're playing three safeties, you're using some kind of dime package, you're figuring out a way for that guy to get on the field. So all those positions, you are finding ways for that rookie to get on the field. Running back would probably be a no. We know they're not going to take a running back in the first round anyway. Quarterback would be a no. We know they're not going to take a quarterback in the first round anyway. Tight end is the one you could kind of be on the fence about, where you could say, well, yeah, they could play some more 12 personnel and that guy could eventually replace Dallas Goedert. I'm generally anti just taking a tight end in the first round. I think we should have learned our lesson by now that that is a very hard position to scout. So that's kind of how it breaks down positionally. And there are other factors, the biggest being positional value. We know they value offensive tackle more than safety or linebacker. So a lot of this comes down to who is available. I think if you gave the Eagles some truth serum, their hope would be one of two things in the first round. One would be to land an offensive lineman who can play guard right away and eventually move over to tackle. That way you are getting value immediately as a rookie, potentially in year two, and you have a succession plan for your right tackle who's 34 years old. I think that would absolutely be a fine use of resources with the 22nd pick. I think the Eagles would view it the same way. The other one, the truth serum, if you gave it to them and said, hey, who would you actually like to get in the first round? I think if they have a corner that they really like, and I know they haven't taken one under Howie Roseman in the first round, I think that's been coincidence. I think that's been circumstances more than anything else. I think they would love to get a corner who they feel good about at 22, someone who can play right away as a rookie and really be a building block in that secondary for years to come. So I'm not saying you force a position. Obviously, we know that's how you make mistakes in the draft. But if you're someone who feels like, hey, it'd be a bummer for the Eagles to go with an offensive tackle who isn't going to make an impact right away, I think you're justified in feeling that way, quite honestly. Yeah, I get that feeling, and I sort of feel the same way. Now, last thing I'll say about this, and then we'll move on. It's tough to know exactly, like, based on history, how the Eagles would feel about just getting an offensive tackle. So there are signs that would suggest, yes, this is something they do pretty consistently. So some examples. 2018, they take Dallas Goedert, even though they had Zach Ertz under 30 and under contract. Like, there was no scenario other than injury that Dallas Goedert was going to replace Zach Ertz as a starter. Now, that was a little different because they leaned into 12 personnel, probably a little bit too much. The offense got slow and methodical, but at least Dallas Goedert was getting on the field while Zach Ertz was still on the roster. So that was 2018. 2019 is a kind, maybe a better comparison. They draft Andre Dillard at 22, even though they still have Jason Peters on the roster as the starting left tackle. Now, that one again is a little bit different because Peters was on a one-year deal or had 1 year left on his contract at the time. So you're looking at that saying, all right, the rookie comes in, learns his first season, and then replaces Jason Peters at left tackle. Now, we know that's not how it ended up, but that was their plan at the time in 2019. 2020, Jalen Hurts, does he fall into this category? It's always different with quarterback. They've explained that before, but you certainly could look at that one. I know the way I was looking at it at the time was saying, why are you using this pick on a quarterback when you have Carson Wentz under this contract? Like, what's the upside? You have a good backup quarterback here. Now, I think that's actually how they were looking at it, that they were looking to get a cheap backup quarterback with Jalen Hurts, and then all sorts of things happen and Hurts ends up replacing Carson Wentz. So that's another thing, one that kind of falls into this category. 2022, they take Cam Jurgens at 51, even though they still had Jason Kelce on the roster. Again, this is one that's a little bit different because Kelce was going year to year. I mean, that could have been a need for them going into the following season. You know, it could have just been 1 year on the bench and then he's starting for Kelce. As it turned out, they felt like Jurgens had some guard versatility and he ended up playing guard in his second season. So, and now you have a replacement plan for Jason Kelce. So that one ended up working out pretty well. We think pretty well. We'll see how Cam Jurgens plays here, but the plan, the reasoning behind it, I think was fine at the time. I think I said as much at the time. So you get the point. They've done things like this in the past. They will overinvest in the offensive line. You can make the argument. They never want to be caught shorthanded there. Sometimes maybe to their detriment where you say, man, you could really use these resources in a different spot, in another different area of the roster, rather than trying to build offensive line depth. At the same time, the offensive line has been a key to their success here for years. So you can say they're absolutely doing the right thing. And again, all those examples I mentioned were a little bit different because there were paths in year one or two for the player to have some type of contributing role. With this one, If you believe Lane Johnson wants to play at least two more seasons, and he's under contract again through 2026 right now. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to play through 2026, but that's just what his contract is. It's not like he's in the final year of his deal. So if you think he wants to play, two more seasons at least with a tackle only prospect, in my opinion, there's like over a 50% chance that the guy doesn't play barring injury in his first two seasons. That doesn't mean doesn't play at all. Obviously, a spot starter potentially with injuries, but is not going to have a significant role barring a big injury in his first two seasons. It's tough for me to get behind that. I feel as I sort of talked it out here with you all, with the audience, I thought, you know what, this is sounding less and less appealing to me. So I don't know what everyone thinks about that. Let me know, but I don't think I would be thrilled with that. Tackle-only prospect at 22. Now, if you trade back, maybe you get a deal. I don't know. But so much depends on the caliber of the player versus the other option. So I can't tell you 100% what my view would be until draft night rolls around. And if they do make that move, how I feel about it. Or if they don't make that move, I might change my tune and say, wait, they reached for this other position. They overthought it. They should have just taken the tackle. It's possible I get there once the draft rolls around. But right now, it would sure be nice to find a player who you feel good about the odds of them giving you something as a rookie or certainly by year two. So there you go. That's some draft talk to lead us off here on the Eagles. We'll get to more of that later in the week. Let's take a break. I want to come back. I want to talk some Sixers. I want to talk some Phillies. We'll do that in a minute here on the Ringers Philly Special. Bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel every Thursday with TNT Thursdays. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or already have an account. You will get bonus bets back if your same-game parlay doesn't win on any NBA on TNT game. NBA same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance to score a bigger payday. So, however you want to play, just head to FanDuel.com/RingerPhilly to bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay with TNT Thursdays. That's FanDuel.com/RingerPhilly. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Minimum 3-leg parlay required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max refund $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
All right, we're back on the Ringers Philly Special. Legitimately, I thought one of the most entertaining Sixers games of the season. I mean, double overtime in San Antonio against the Spurs. I don't care that the Spurs are 19-59. They got Wemby, and you go down there without Joel Embiid, and Sixers find a way to storm back, force overtime, get to double overtime, eventually win the basketball game, their fifth win in a row. I got three takeaways here, and then we'll talk about what the win actually means in terms of the Eastern Conference playoff standings. But number one, Tyrese Maxey. I mean, The guy just had to put the entire team on his back to get to overtime. 54 minutes played. He just came back from injury. Last game, he had the hip tightness. He comes back from injury. Was it two games ago? And he plays 54 minutes and has 52 points. Yeah, this was his third game back. He was obviously gassed, but he was still so bouncy, so energetic in spurts down the stretch, still attacking, still taking off in transition, still creating space to get his shots off, not settling for jumpers, not just settling for threes because he was tired, which you see some players do. He's just been such a joy to watch. I legitimately cannot wait to watch this version of Tyrese Maxey in the playoffs. And I can't wait to watch him in a Sixers uniform for what, the next 5, 7, 10 years, whatever it is. He just wants it. He wants to win so bad. He's not scared. He's got so much energy. Just a joy to watch. Incredible performance without Joel Embiid. So great job by Tyrese Maxey. Really, without him having an epic performance, they're losing that game in regulation. Takeaway number two. I feel like we haven't had a lot of Nick Nurse talk this season. It's been a weird season. Embiid missed so much time. They've had so many injuries. They were so good when Embiid's been on the floor. And then they're just trying to tread water when he hasn't been out there. They look like one of the worst teams in the NBA for stretches there. So it's been hard to really evaluate Nick Nurse. But man, in this basketball game, two absolute beauties he drew up in end-of-game situations. End of regulation. Nico Batum finds Tyrese Maxey for the layup. That's with 2.7 seconds left. I mean, that is not an easy situation to be able to get a shot like that, to get that shot. That was incredible. And then the end of the first overtime, 0.8 seconds on the clock. First of all, great job calling the timeout right away. Get that 0.8 seconds on the clock. And then the play he drew up to Kelly Oubre to get that look in the corner for a three was phenomenal. I mean, I cannot remember many looks that a team has gotten with 0.88 seconds left like that in that spot. Now, Oubre missed it, but man, that is all you can ask for. And so I was just thinking, I always talk, when I'm talking NFL stuff, I always talk about how I cannot stand, this was a Chip Kelly thing, when coaches blame players for a lack of execution. When they get up there at a press conference, whatever sport it is, why'd you lose? Well, we didn't execute. We didn't execute down the stretch. We didn't execute here. We had some opportunities, but we didn't execute. Dude, your job, the number one line in a job description of a professional head coach, is to get the players to execute. That is literally Don Draper meme. That's what the money is for, to get the players to execute. So what did Nick Nurse do? He got the players to execute. You saw it on those plays. You're shorthanded. You got all sorts of guys out there who you didn't think were going to be out there at this point in the season, and you got them to execute in two key spots. So I just felt like, man, from a tactical standpoint, that's a big difference going into the playoffs. Again, Sixers are going to be big underdogs in the playoffs. If they get through the play-in and they have a series in the playoffs, they're going to be underdogs, big underdogs, no doubt about it. But I am kind of curious to see what kind of edge can Nick Nurse give them against some of these teams. So that was really, really encouraging. And then, of course, takeaway number three. I mean, Ricky Council the fourth, the playmaking. Just an absurd left-handed wraparound pass to Batum with the game on the line in the second overtime, gets him a wide open look at a three. I was watching the replay over and over again. I don't know how he made that pass. Incredible pass. Council, 22 minutes, 11 points, 4 steals, 3 assists. Just gave them great minutes. And again, I think you do have to credit coaching a little bit when you see a young player, a rookie, come in and give you those minutes in a big spot when you're shorthanded. That means the coaching staff is doing something right. So really, really fun minutes, really fun game from Ricky Council. All right. So where does this win leave us? Sixers are now half game up on the Heat for the 7 seed. The 6 seed, still a long, long shot. Okay. barring a miracle, the Pacers right now are the sixth seed. They're one game ahead of the Sixers. So you look at the standings and say, oh, what are you talking about, Shiel? They can make up one game. The problem is the Pacers have the tie break on account of head-to-head matchups in the regular season. So you're really... You're really two games back. I mean, you have to pick up two games with three to play for the sixth seed. So either you go 3-0 and the Pacers go 1-2. That's basically what it's got to be. You go 2-1, they go 0-3. Those are your chance. You know, those are really the only scenarios where you can jump up there and get the sixth seed. So impossible? No. Highly unlikely. I would say yes. That, although Sixers' schedule is easy, so it's more about the Pacers losing games. If the Pacers can find a way to lose two or three down the stretch, then maybe you have a shot at that, but it's still probably not going to happen. So the seventh seed now is very much a possibility. Sixers with this win and the Heat lose to the Pacers on Sunday, Sixers are now a half game up on the Miami Heat. Now, that doesn't mean that they control their own destiny, because the Heat have four games left. The Sixers have three. So if the Heat win out, it will be if the Heat win out, they will have a better conference record. So even if the two teams finish with the same record, the Heat will win the tiebreak. The head-to-head, they're tied, but the Heat have a better conference record. So if Heat go 4-0, they will be the 7 seed. Sixers will be the 8 seed. What is the significance there? Obviously, the 7 seed is hosting that play-in game. So right now, it's up in there. We'll see. If you look at the standings right now, you'll see the Sixers are the 7 seed. But Sixers have three games to go. Heat have four games to go. So Sixers still need a little help there. But hey, Sunday worked out pretty well for them. If we're thinking best-case scenario, it's that you beat the Heat in the play-in. Hopefully you get that game at home. You beat the Heat at home in the play-in. And then you play the Bucks in the first round and you see what happens. The Bucks are not playing good basketball right now. I think 15-16 with Doc Rivers. They are no juggernaut. You are 29-8 with Joel Embiid. And so, you take your chances in that kind of series. Nick Nurse versus Doc Rivers. I don't know. I'm not going to talk myself into anything. I'm not going to go that far. But maybe you have a shot there. And I will say the vibes with this Sixers team are absolutely better and absolutely different than previous seasons. It might not lead to anything. 10 days from now, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, I could be on here absolutely ripping them and saying, here we go, another season, another wasted season. But right now, after that game, I'm feeling all right about them. Okay. The Philadelphia Phillies. Let's move on. Phillies take 2-3 from the Nationals. Kind of a weird series. On Friday, they win 4-0, but they leave 12 guys on base. You're like, they only have four runs right now. Aaron Nola walks 4 5 2/3 innings, but the Nationals only have two hits in the game. So weird game. Saturday, JT Realmuto hitting behind Bryce Harper. Nationals put Harper on intentionally. And JT Realmuto, home run to spark the Phillies win. Realmuto has been swinging the bat well here through the first nine games. And then Sunday, just kind of a snoozer. Phillies bats don't show up. Five hits in the entire game. They strike out 10 times and they lose that one. They cannot complete the sweep against the Nationals. So let's start with the good. The bullpen was awesome this weekend. This is what you were hoping for, banking on when the season started. You were hoping, all right, bullpen's going to be one of the three, five best in all of baseball. They come out game one, terrible against the Braves. Since then, very good. This weekend, bullpen, 10 innings in three games, did not allow a run. Love it. Very fun to watch. So it's not always going to be that good. We all know how relievers go. We all know how the bullpen goes. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be games that they lose for the Phillies. But overall, if you were hoping this would be a strength of the baseball team, it was a strength this weekend. And I think through the first couple weeks of the season here, it has been a strength for the most part. So that's the good. The bad. I hate to be like, I don't know if this is just like basic baseball fan or whatever, or if you feel the same way, but they are killing me with the outs on the base paths again. It's deja vu. It's last year all over again. From Corey Seidman of NBC Sports Philly. The Phillies have been caught stealing six times, which leads the majors. They've also been thrown out on the base paths six times in situations other than stolen base attempts. Guess what? That also leads the majors 12 outs. 12 outs in 9 games, either out on the base paths or caught stealing. It certainly felt like that many. I mean, I would have been shocked if they didn't lead the majors in either of those categories. So a bunch of self-inflicted mistakes. In many ways, again, it feels like a repeat of the start last year, where you look at it and you say, I like this player. They have a bunch of very likable players. We said that over and over again last year. But they also, at times, play like a dumb baseball team. Maybe not even at times. I would say way too often. Certainly it feels that way. I don't know. It feels that way right now. It felt that way throughout most of last season until you got to like August there. So, could really do without some of those moments. So maybe just get them out of your system here in the first couple weeks, and then let's move beyond that. All right, then some individual performances I wanted to get to. Let me stress again. Only been 9 games. I get it. Small sample. We're not going to treat this like an Eagle season. Having said that, Johan Rojas. I'll give everyone a minute. Should I just not talk for 10? Right. No. Johan Rojas has hit one ball hard through the first 9 games of the season. That is not like my opinion. That is the statistic. He has hit one ball hard. He has 2 walks, and he has 1 hit on 22 at-bats. Now, before the season, I said, if the Phillies coaches, if they feel like, hey, he can work through this at the major league level, it's not going to shatter his confidence. If they're saying, no, you guys don't get it. We're seeing stuff behind the scenes that is leading us to believe that this will eventually lead to positive results. Then you let him work through it. I was with that. No big deal. But man, this is just about as bad of a start as you could imagine. Again, 1 hit on 22 at-bats. He's really just been an automatic out when he's in the lineup. He looks lost out there. Like there was a game, what was it, last week, where like John Kruk was just, he's on fire to start the season. I will say that about John Kruk. But he was just like, he couldn't hide his disgust for Rojas' approach and just how he looked up there at the plate. So, he had a ball he hit, I think, to right field a couple of games ago where it felt like a victory. I mean, it felt like a grand slam because the guy got the ball out of the outfield, out of the infield and actually made solid contact. So this is going to be an ongoing storyline. I have a feeling he's going to draw more of the fans' ire if this continues for another week, another 2 weeks. I'll still trust the coaches. If they say, no, he's working through it, he's going to be okay, then that's fine. It's April. It's not time to panic. But it has been pretty tough to watch so far. It's kind of like before they had the DH where the pitcher comes up and you're just like, all right, automatic out. Get back to the top of the order. So that's one guy, one storyline we're keeping an eye on here early in the season. Another guy, Nick Castellanos, is struggling through the first 9 games. A 4.11 OPS. That ranks 102nd out of 106 players in the majors who have had at least 3.1 plate appearances per team game. So 106 qualifying players. He is 102nd with his OPS so far. Again, only 9 games. We know he's a streaky guy. Maybe, this week they go to St. Louis. Maybe he'll catch fire. There's going to be stretches this year where he catches fire. He's such a strange player because you're almost thinking in your head a little bit, all right, get this out of your system. If this means like August, September, you're going to get hot. I mean, remember last year it was on fire first half of the season and then it flipped the second half of the season and into the playoffs. So maybe we're just reversing that. Maybe he's not going to be good the first half of the season this year. Then he'll get hot. If it means he's playing well in the playoffs, I'll take it. I don't know that that's, we can just sign up for that and get that deal. I don't know that that's necessarily what it's going to be, but he is off to a slow start here to start the season. And the last guy, Whit Merrifield. I was told that this man was not going to play that much baseball. I was told that he was 35 years old. I was told that he wore down last year because he played too much and that the Phillies were going to have a different plan for him and he was versatile, but they would play, you know, two times a week, maybe three times a week at the most, and he would be fine in that role. He's been out there in 5 of 9 games, so it's not every game, but it's a little more than I was expecting. I don't think that we needed this much. He is hitting .176. He has 3 hits. They are all singles, and he has not hit a ball hard in 17 at-bats. Again, that is not my opinion. This is the, you know, they measure it. If your exit velocity is 95 miles per hour or higher, that is considered a hard hit ball. He has 0 hard hit balls in 17 at-bats. So, might not be his fault. He's 35. I mean, guy's only, what, 6 years younger than I am. You know, I don't think he was expecting to be getting this many at-bats. So it's maybe a referendum on kind of their other options and the rest of the roster that he's playing this much. Or maybe it's not that much, 5 of 9 games. I don't know. I feel like they could ease it back a little bit and say, let's get some other guys out there. Or maybe he will improve, and you'll say, Shield, why were you jumping on the poor guy after 9 games? That's entirely possible as well. So offense, very much a work in progress. They're 4-5. They won a series. That's good. They hadn't won a series yet. So they're 4-5. They go to St. Louis, and then they return home for a 4-game series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. So there you go. That's the Phillies. Last thing I wanted to get to, Don Staley. Shout out, Don Staley. From North Philly, like everyone else, based on the ratings, like everyone else. I was glued to the TV last few rounds of the women's tournament, certainly the final four on Friday night, and then the championship game on Sunday. South Carolina caps off the perfect season, 38-0. I mean, Dawn Staley, I mean, the record for her basketball team, absurd. Last two seasons, 74-1. Last three seasons, 109-3 with 2 titles and 3 Final Four appearances. I mean, think about that. Absurd. I got to say that again. Last three seasons, Dawn Staley's South Carolina team, 109-3 with 2 titles and 3 Final Four appearances. Two thoughts I had watching Dawn Staley, okay? One of them. There was a part of me, I wonder if some of you are the same way, where you're like happy for her and root, but you were like, man, this would be a lot more fun if she was at a Philly school. You wish this could have happened at a Philly school. She just has so much Philly pride. You know, there's the Phillies are tweeting about her afterwards. We know she's a fan of all the Philly sports teams. I know it's probably not realistic. I know she was at Temple. She had success there. Not this kind of success. There's all sorts of conversations about resources and recruiting and all sorts of other things that I am not going to claim to be an expert about. But if you're like me, was there a part of you that just watched that saying like, hey, we should not have let her get out of here. She belongs here. She will be such a legend here. She's still a legend. But if she were doing it for a Philly school, man, that really would have been something. So that was one thought I had. And then the second thought I had, a couple weeks ago, Rich Hoffman and I talked about current Philly athletes with the highest approval rating. I started to think just generally watching Dawn Staley, native Philadelphians with the highest approval rating right now, where does she rank? You don't even have to just limit it to sports. I mean, I was having a hard time thinking of many native Philadelphians in any walk of life right now where you would just pull the Philadelphia public, and maybe I'm naive and not everyone's tuned in to the sports stuff, and you would just say, put their names on a list and say, approve, yes or no. You know, that was the exercise we did with the athletes. I mean, who's saying no to Dawn Staley? Like, I mean, she's just going to be close to 100%. So I don't know who else is on that list. Honestly, the only other person I thought of, I'm not thinking of very obvious people who you are all going to tweet at me or message me or email me or whatever when you listen to this. But Ray Dittinger was the other guy I thought of. Like, all right, everybody loves Ray Dittinger. Everybody loves Dawn Staley, 2 native Philadelphians. Who else is on that list of people who you're just like, oh, no one's going to say a bad word about them? Like, I was thinking about AI, but I actually think there are probably, you know, AI detractors out there. I don't think it'll be quite as high, just again, in terms of approval rating. Do you approve of this person? Yes or no? So who are the other people I'm missing right there? Let me know. But anyway, congratulations, Dawn Staley, South Carolina. Very fun. It's been a great March Madness. I mean, I was dogging on March Madness coming into it, saying it's not the same as it was when I was like 22 years old and it was a big event and I would just, you know, hang out from Thursday to Sunday of that opening weekend and watch all the games. But man, this has been a great March Madness, both the men and the women. Like I've been glued to the TV for all of these games. We'll get the Purdue-UConn final on Monday night. All right. Everyone enjoy the eclipse, I guess. I'm not a big eclipse guy. I got to admit it. I'm not a big eclipse guy. Everyone's hyped up about the eclipse. My whole family's hyped up about the eclipse. I'm not trying to be a curmudgeon about this and say like eclipse overrated. I'm just telling you, I generally speaking in my life, I have not been a big eclipse guy. As you know, the audience knows, I don't get excited about many things. So I'm going to try to enjoy it. On Monday, I'm going to see what the hype's about. I'm not going to come on. I'm not going to tell you don't enjoy the eclipse. So there's an eclipse. We're all going to look at the eclipse. I am told the eclipse is a huge deal. Moon, sun, all the good stuff. All right, we'll check it out. All right, thanks to Ace Producer Cliff Augustine for producing. I will be back later this week with Solak to really start digging deep into the NFL draft. And of course, we will talk more Sixers and Phillies. Looking forward to all of that. Talk to you soon on the Ringers Philly Special. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.